become a supporter of the program, click the Anchor FM support buttons, 99 cents a month, or $3.99 or $9.99, or hit the PayPal me link that we provide. Thank you very much for listening to Phantom Electric Ghost.
Hello, this is Phantom Electric Ghost.
Hi there, this is Shalia.
Hi, we are recording. So Welcome to the show. We are a podcaster. We interview, we've been interviewing artists since 2018. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for welcoming me.
So Shalia, that's how we pronounce your name, right?
Yes, I mean, you put an extra emphasis on that Sha, but it's Shalia. Shalia. And what I like to tell people is that it rhymes with Aaliyah. And okay. That kind of helps to cement with the word association. But yes, I'm Shalia.
Shalia, okay. Mm-hmm. So you sent us a lot of good background information. We sent you the actual questions. So we're going to start and kind of integrate what you've sent us with our questions. So the first question we always ask any artist that we talk to is, when did you first get into your art form? And music is what you do. You do also do dance as well, right?
That's correct. Yes.
So I don't know which one you want to start with, that music or dance.
I'll start with music because I was born into it. My mother is also a singer and a pianist, and she was a choir director for the church that I grew up going to. And she was a part of the Gospel Music Workshop of America. So I was born into the church, I would say, which made me also be born into music because she was my very first musical influence. Mm-hmm. You know, she just exposed me to music from a very early age, like at birth, literally. So
were you in those choirs? Were you in the choirs?
I was absolutely in those choirs. I was in those choirs. I was leading songs as a little girl. Like, I just was fully engulfed in that experience. The church experience, the choir experience, singing, leading, and then eventually even liturgical dance. But I didn't quite start out with dance in church. But anyway, yeah, so that's where I got my start musically. And then eventually it became something that I knew I wanted to do professionally and that I couldn't live without it. So yeah.
That's interesting because if you go back, you know, in the day and you read about music history and like a lot of the Motown acts, you know, Aretha Franklin and, you know, and just a lot of the black singers, from that, you know, either Stax or Motown or any of the labels, they all mm-hmm. came out of that kind of gospel tradition, or they came out of the blues tradition, or they come out of jazz.
Very true.
So it seems like that's kind of like the starting point where you'll get some other musicians that come out of the conservatory, they'll come out of classical. But right. You know, as African-Americans, we kind of have that as our base.
Absolutely. You just said it, like gospel, blues, jazz. For a lot of us, that's our start. You know, and there are a few of us who have that conservatory, but at the beginning of our careers, but a lot of us don't. And it's, you know, it's just, we just get it from the dirt.
Yeah, we kind of feel it. Like my grandpa, you know, he's a coal miner in West Virginia, never taught how to play anything. He just pick up a banjo or a mandolin, he could just do it. You know, and it's
wow.
And I kind of got it, I believe, from his side, my side, my mom's side of the family, because he could just pick up any instrument and just play it. And
that's amazing.
And I was able to kind of just pick up keyboards, and my brother picked up guitar, and we just kind of felt it. And we didn't get any really formal training. We just kind of picked up on it because we had the same kind of bones. You know, we were listening to the gospel, we're listening to Motown, listening to, you know, Miles Davis or Coltrane, and we're like, okay, we're just going to feel it and pick it up from that, you know?
That's beautiful. Like my mom, that's how she was with the piano. She picked up the piano. Somebody that was an elder to her at one point, like, you know, showed her a few things, and then she just picked it up from there. My brother, he's a bass player. Shout out to the Victor. But yeah, he's a producer as well. But yeah, he picked up the bass. Mm. And so, yeah.
So from there, like, it's not, I mean, I read some of your background, but you mm-hmm. realized you had a talent because your mom probably saw it and nurtured it in the choir. So you were doing it on
absolutely.
Your own. But when did you feel like you wanted to write your own material? Because it's one thing about being, you could be a gospel singer, you could be a music, and you never write your own. You mean, you might write your own gospel music, but a lot of people, sometimes they get into music and they're session players, or they play, you know, they don't play their own music. So how did you feel like mm-hmm. that you wanted to get into writing your own music?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So from a very early age, even when I was engulfed in the gospel world, my mom had a best friend. Her name is Phyllis. Bless her dear soul. She has passed on from us now. But Phyllis was very influential in my music career as well. She actually was a songwriter. And like I said, she was best friends with my mom. So I saw that. I saw her writing songs, teaching them to choirs, introducing them to choirs, and then having the choirs lead them. So I saw the power in that. Mm. And she even allowed me to be a part of that process, leading songs, allowing me to be in adult choirs, which was a big deal at the time. Mm-hmm. So I saw that modeled for me. So since I saw it modeled, I knew that it was possible. And then eventually, I think right around like middle school was when I started playing around with writing lyrics. But I would say in high school was when I really, really got into writing poetry. And then some of those poems I would turn into songs. So I don't know. It was just like something happened. Something switched in me in high school. And I just became this poet. And I was a private poet because I wasn't going around like reciting my poems. I was very private about it. But I would say that was the beginning of my songwriting career.
That's interesting because a lot of singer-songwriters I've talked to, like 40 in the last 2 years, they kind of have this story where they'll say they were started as poets, you know, mm-hmm. and then they were kind of private about it. They didn't feel comfortable, but then they ended up taking that poetry and they ended up translating into songwriting, you know, and a lot of times poetry does end up translating for these singer-songwriters into like the first steps of writing a song is kind of like the base of it.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there are a lot of singer-songwriters, and then they find a way to turn it into music where it translates better.
Yeah, it's just formatting, basically. Like, because obviously some poets don't become songwriters, but in order for your poem to then become a song, then it has to fit that format.
Yeah, it's got to get the structure of like a popular song, or a song that's actually going to have a hook, it's going to have a melody, it's going to have the chorus, it's going to have all the elements of songwriting, and it changes the nature from a beat poet, like a Harlem Renaissance poet. You know, it's a different thing. You're not going to be iambic pentameter is not going to actually work, you know.
Precisely.
For a song, so you have to change it up. But it's interesting. So who were your influences and reference points when you started to actually write your own music? Who do you feel that are the people or the artists that you gravitated toward? Not that you wanted to, you know, clone what they were doing, but you were inspired by what they were doing.
Ooh, okay. So obviously there's so many artists that inspire me and that I absolutely love and admire. But I have to say, I guess in the earlier days of my songwriting, just to specifically pinpoint that time frame, I would say Erykah Badu was very influential for me. Mm. Sade, Lauryn Hill, even Donny Hathaway, because there's something just so rich about his tone, his approach to music, and it's just this deep felt soul.
It was like that neo soul kind of soul sound, which I do hear. I do hear like fugies and you know, I do hear that. I do hear Lauryn Hill in your tone and what you're doing in that thing. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there seems to be a lot of that retro neo soul. Like retro soul seems to get coming back really a lot right now. But
because you can really feel it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that Motown sound. I mean, the reason I love Motown. You hear the Funk Brothers on a track, and you're like, wow. You know, it's just the nature of like, I'm a keyboard player, and I'm kind of like into the technical stuff, but this listening to the drummers, Motown drummers, used to always just, you know, trip me out because the level of precision, and it might mm-hmm. seem simple, but what they're doing mm-hmm. is so well-defined, and it's like, you know, in the age of drum machines, you know, having a real drummer. It's like a revelation when I listen to those things.
Yes, and you know, when somebody is really good, they make it look like what they're doing is easy. And then you go and try it, and then you find out, oh, it's not as easy as I thought.
Yeah, the level of skill with the Motown sound and the Stax drummers and, you know, the guys working in the soul, you know, arena is like unbelievable. You know, I was watching some documentary about this guy Purdy. He created the Purdy Shuffle. And he brought the Purdy Shuffle from like Motown to like Steely Dan. You know, he was a session musician for Steely Dan, and he had such a skill set that he was like doing recordings for tons of people. And it's just the level of precision when you go and look at it. It seems simple, like you said, but it's like it's a lot more complicated than what it was.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of the nature of music that I've always been kind of drawn to, is like the precision. It's like the creativity of it. So would you say that your style is in the neo soul genre, or would you kind of say we're more contemporary, or kind of open to any style?
Well, I think my personal style is definitely a blend of contemporary soul, R&B, and hip hop. With some jazz elements. You don't really hear the jazz as much in my own personal music, but when I'm featured with certain other artists like The Victor, I've been featured on his most recent project called Begin to End. That has more of a hip hop jazz, a fusion sound. But my own personal style, yes, definitely soul, R&B. And what in a lot of times that's considered neo soul.
So like your background showed that you had like over 10 years of professional experience as a working musician. You're a national recording artist. You're a touring artist. You had been the co-lead singer of the R&B funk group Watersteed. Can you kind of talk about that experience?
Well, I've had, you know, you can imagine over 10 years, a lot has happened. So I've been able to do multiple national tours. I even did a 3-month residency in Russia, where I performed, you know, multiple nights a week. I want to say, 4 nights a week for 3 months in Russia, which was a life-changing experience. It opened my eyes up to a lot of different things as far as how people are living in other parts of the world, and also how we're living. And, you know, when you travel abroad, it tends to just expand your horizon. But it was a great experience, and it really allowed me to hone my craft, because I really didn't have anything else. Like, that was it. And the people were really happy that we were there.
Were they really into what you were doing?
They were.
Yeah,
they were very much so welcoming.
European. Well, I was in Japan for 2 years, and I was just like amazed by the kind of nature. Like the Japanese, when I lived in Tokyo, the fact that you could go to like Shibuya, like, or you could go to the entertainment district, and there was like all these Japanese bands trying to mirror or like jazz rock.
Right. Fusion, hip-hop.
They just loved
America. And some of them are really good, right?
They were
amazing.
They were emulating, and not trying to rip it off, but some of them were emulating, you know, like Coltrane and stuff. And you're like, wow, they really dig American music. And that's what absolutely. I really got into. So was it the same thing in Russia? Did they really dig like African American blues, hip hop, soul? Is that what the feeling was, that they really appreciated it?
Well, not only did they really appreciate it, they were not emulating it. They were not trying to do it on their own. They brought us there for that. And they very much so appreciated our performance. And we were like the only African-Americans in the city. Dare I say definitely not the country, but I didn't see any other people that look like me there. And you might think in the situation like that, like, oh, well, you know, was it hostile or whatever? But no, they were very, very welcoming. They were intrigued. They had so many questions. They followed me around, a lot of pictures, all of that. It's like very, very famous. Definitely had that fame experience there.
Treated like the Beatles or something.
it just like that. It was amazing. Like literally like hundreds of people following me in the street. It was great. It was quite an experience.
So as a touring artist, that's a whole different thing than like, you know, more of a session artist or a person that doesn't actually, you know, there's an artist like, you know, a big band like I Love Steely Dan, they decided they didn't want to tour anymore. And they just became like the way the Beatles did at the end of their career. All they did is stay in the studio, which is kind of where everybody is right now.
Out of necessity.
but it's kind of like I think one of the good things, the great things about being a musician is that crowd interaction, like when you perform. So what are your feelings about like how, you know, as a musician, a lot of times we can kind of we actually can give more because we're feeding off the crowd. And in this new kind of environment where we can create music, but we don't have that interaction with the people. Is that become something that makes it harder for you to create because you don't have that, or have you found a way to deal with that?
You know, that's a very fair question, because I was just recently talking to a couple of my friends about this, and I was saying how different things are and how much I do miss the stage. I miss that interaction. I miss that instant gratification, if you will, that instant reaction and energy and exchange of energy with the audience. I do miss that, but there's always a trade-off, you know? So while I miss that, it's given me more time to really get into the lab and knock out some things that I've been wanting to knock out for a while, recording-wise. And it's forced me, and I'm going to say this to you like I've said to many other people, I really look at 2020 as the year of forced evolution. That's what it was for me. That's what it was for so many other people that I know, and even looking at it from looking at it from a grander scale, if you will. A lot of things have been forced to evolve, and I feel the same way for my own personal career. So, you know, I've been dabbling with the guitar for a while, but I got on the guitar and I'm actually playing the guitar on two of the tracks for my upcoming project that I'll be releasing in April. I'm actually playing the guitar on that. So even though I do miss the live performances and the stage and having that interaction, it's forced me to become more engaging with my audience virtually. So like I said, it's a trade-off, and I do look forward to getting back onto the stage. And I think I'm going to have to be willing to travel more to places that are more open, because there are places that you could go to perform.
Yeah.
It's just not, you know, it's not as open as it used to be.
So you're talking about the lab, and like, I have my own like home studio. Is that what you're referring? Do you have your own home studio where you work things out in your DAW, or do you primarily like to go to like established studios and work stuff out that way? Or do you have your own home studio where you work up your demos?
I'm actually in the process of building more of a home studio, but I have the equipment to do a lot of pre-production at home. So I have recording equipment, recording programs and mics and that kind of thing. But I am also in the process of making that even better, like upgrading that forced evolution I was talking about. Because I'm also, you know, I'm writing and collaborating with artists that are in different places, Atlanta and Seattle. So there's a lot of file sharing, and I don't, especially with the times we're living in right now, I don't feel comfortable always having to go to somebody else's studio. So yes, I have access to studios, and I do that too, but I've been doing more from home. So I'm actually, I don't know if I should say it yet, because I'm not making my official announcement until my video releases next week. So I won't say it yet, because I don't want to put it out there.
New project getting ready to drop?
So the project, I can talk about that. This announcement is more of a life announcement that I want to hold off on. But as far as the project, yes, that the project will be dropping in April. And I'm releasing a new video for that project next week.
Awesome.
January 28th. I'm excited.
Well, the cool thing about our podcast is that if that comes out, once that comes out, we can update this on all of our platforms. So we go out to like 11 platforms automatically, including Apple and Spotify and Radio Public and all of them. But we have the ability to put hyperlinks. So we will put your overall link. And so that will probably push wherever, whatever's out there. But we can put specific links on as well. We'll be happy to do that. But it was interesting when you're talking about like the home studio situation. Because the story, like my whole band is like, I live in New Hampshire and there's really nothing going on in kind of progressive electronic. What I do is typically like in Berlin or London, the type of people who want to hear what I do. I live in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so I've been working with people overseas since, you know, a lot, you know, before the pandemic.
Right.
And I had like my own home studio, and I was doing the kind of file exchange thing before it was a thing. And now it seems like the whole world is like where I was since 2017.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
But it's interesting now that I remember when I was doing it, people are like, oh, you know, you really should go to the studio. You really shouldn't do that yourself. You really, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, I've kind of built my whole brand on doing it myself. And
That's awesome that you can do it yourself.
yeah, it was just kind of like, you know,
self-reliant.
The control freak, you kind of think about it. Like my heroes are like Stevie Wonder and Hendrix, you know, right? And Stevie Wonder used to be famous for just if he wanted to do the drums, he'd do it himself, you know, he would actually go do it if he thought he was going to get to what he wanted. And he would even pick up a bass and do it. And so I kind of come from that idea, like the princes and the Stevie Wonders of the world. You want to do it, you can't wait for everybody to show up. Sometimes you just got to do it.
Self-reliance. I'm telling you, you are speaking my language because so many times, and it's wonderful to have people that you can depend on, but sometimes you just got to get it out. You just have to get it out. And other people are not always available. So if you have the capability to produce, especially multiple instrument sounds, that's excellent. Like, just get it done.
Yeah, I mean, it's always done. Like, if I could get a real drummer, like, I can't do it. But, like, yeah, if there's a guy that's a drummer and he's done it for 30 years, yeah, of course, he's going to probably pay better than me. But sometimes it's like when you're a singer-songwriter, it's a whole idea of like, the singer-songwriters. Because there used to be all these writers in Tin Pan Alley mm-hmm. that would give stuff to Frank Sinatra, right? But then they started singing it themselves. And that's kind of the art of it. Well, sometimes you're not going to be Diane Warwick. You're not going to be Frank. You're not going to be Michael Jackson. But sometimes the honesty of a singer-songwriter actually singing their own song, and they might not have the 5-octave voice or the pitch perfect, but it's kind of like it's that honesty that they have because it's their material.
Yes.
So I think that's a whole different thing that sometimes people like lose sight of. But
very good point.
So when you you work today, you probably collab with people. You know, you've been in bands, you know, you've been in groups. I've seen like you got some new stuff where you said Begin to End with the Victor. Yeah. So what's your, you look like you're open to like working with people. You have your own projects. Is that how you're continuing in 2021 where you're doing your own work? Or are you focused on trying to be like a solo act? Where are you in your career?
Okay. So where I'm in my career, I am absolutely focused on my solo artistry. My solo artistry as far as the recorded music, performing my original music, and also my career as a songwriter. And so I'm still open to collaborating as a solo artist. So there's an artist I'm working with right now, Teru, out of Seattle. I'm writing for his organization, for his group, and I'm also performing on that. So I'm totally open to continue to collaborate, but just as a solo artist. So not as a group member, but So, and I'm obviously putting out my own solo project as well this year. So a lot of energy will go towards that.
Do you find like in this new type of era of music that putting out, continually putting out projects, whether you're collaborating or working on your own stuff, that compared to like the old days, sometimes an artist would put out something every 2 years, every 4 years. But in this kind of playlist world, I see a lot of artists putting out stuff like every month or every 2 months or showing up on a feature. Do you feel like in this kind of market, there's more room to put out more material?
I do feel that there's more room. I also feel that there's more pressure. I think because people are so accessible in general. A lot of us are on multiple social media platforms. You can text, you can chat, you can FaceTime, there are so many ways to access people. I feel like people want that accessibility, and the same with music. You drop something and it's like, okay, people like it. They'll listen. It's like, okay, it's slapping. But then it's like, okay, well, what are you working on next? You know, it's this culture, this drive, hustle culture of constantly what's next, what's next, what's next. So that's that pressure that I'm referring to. And then because there is so much accessible technology, if you have the means or you have the skill and the capability, you can produce more from home. You can even take other people's tracks that you could just get online and just write to it, record it, put it out. So there is almost like an expectation for you to put out more content more frequently. However, there's still the the truth and the idea of quality.
Yeah.
So you have the quantity versus
quality.
Yeah. But you know, when you can marry the two, it's excellent. When you can, you know, pump out the products, you know, consistently and also keep it at a you know, quality level,
yeah,
that's excellent. I'm more so interested in quality right now, especially since I'm really establishing myself as a solo artist, since I have been involved with collaborations, groups, and bands for quite some time. Now I'm really making my own statement. So it's important for me for the quality to be there. And also, just to keep it completely 100, I had actually planned on releasing my project like a year ago.
Oh, wow.
I'm releasing it in this spring, basically. But I wanted to release it last spring. But that was at the top of the shutdown because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just ran into a lot of different hurdles. I still worked it. Mm-hmm. I still got it recorded. It's done. As a matter of fact, it's literally being mixed right now. I had a great conversation with my mix engineer earlier today, just working through some of the levels on a couple of the tracks. But it took some time. It took some time because of life circumstances.
Was that because typically you know, when you're trying to really be successful with the release, you want to be able to perform it? Is that in anticipation that you think you'll be able to find the venues, like you mentioned, that you're going to find, you have found some open venues that you can actually, you know, push your project live?
Not necessarily just that. I mean, that is an element, the performance piece, but because there are different moving parts, I guess on the back end, you could say, with the business, the administration, with the production, you know, there are multiple people that are a part of this project. It's not just me. It's not just me and one other person, but there are multiple people involved.
Okay.
And because there are multiple people involved, everybody has to be aligned for it all to,
they
you
have
know,
to be available to actually, you know,
all of that,
all that stuff. Yeah. And you got to get the video in, you got to get the promotion, you got to get your bookers and all, everybody got, you don't want to pick it up.
So here we are. Like, finally we're in a space where it's like, okay, everybody's in place. Let's get it done.
That's interesting because, you know, a lot of the artists I've talked to, they've been kind of like, because of COVID, they've been in this mode where they've been, you know, doing what you said. I've talked to a lot of artists that have held their work back and have been, you know, learning new mm-hmm. instruments. You know, guys that were bass players learning guitar. You know, guys that wanted to learn the drums and say, well, this is the time to learn it. And so, you know, people picking up violin, doing all kinds of things, learning how to become recording engineers. And then working on producing other people's records. So it's again,
that's
people
amazing.
Are just saying, okay, well, I can take this time and actually really, you know, build up my capabilities in some way and not just sit there and, you know, stream Netflix. Mm-hmm. go and say, but you know what? I can't do anything because I can't play at the club. It's like, no, you could actually learn how to play, you know, something else or get better at what you do. So I found I mean, I collaborated with a Canadian poet and we put out a spoken word album, a little EP. And, you know, we never met. We just did everything over the net. And, you know, you just never know who you're going to deal with. I mean, I work with an actress that really wants to be a musician and I did like an EDM record. And so you never know who you're going to meet and what people want to do. And sometimes you can take advantage of a skill set or work with somebody and say, oh, well, that could work and let's try it, you know? So I think that's, you know, the nature of today's world is that you can still work with people, even though you physically can't get together. I've actually had more opportunities in the last year than I did when things weren't, you know, locked down.
I know what you mean by that. Like the opportunities have shifted. So it's like, oh, okay, well, I was planning on doing this and I was planning on doing that. That's no longer available. But look, these other opportunities came up. So I see exactly what you mean with that. And I would love to hear some of these projects
just,
you're working
on. Yeah,
it's
just interesting, you know, because I like to do very experimental things. They're kind of left a weird field. But I kind of came up showing mm-hmm. my age. You know, I'm a child of the 70s. I'm a child of, like, I used to listen to albums on vinyl. You know, I bought Purple Rain on vinyl when it came out.
Wow, nice though.
Yeah,
Like
I got
you
the
got the
original, like the
original
first
original.
printing. But it was just like the whole experience compared to today. The one thing I kind of miss is album-oriented projects, because I grew up, listening to songs in the key of life. My pop had it on vinyl, and he had the extra 78 that came with it, and it was like this whole big thing. When we sat down to listen to that, we listened to the whole thing, because it was
Excellent.
like that's how you're supposed to listen to it. And my dad really got me into music, and he would sit down and listen to a whole James Brown, like the Payback. He'd listen to the whole thing. He'd be grooving into it, and I'm like, yeah, that's it,
Ooh.
Yeah,
Well, no,
and
10-minute
then
song
yeah,
time,
that's like
like the
you can
whole
listen to the
thing.
whole groove, because that's a groove band. It's like it goes on forever, and and you just
Right.
it's just a different experience today. You get people say, oh, you can only do 2.5 minutes,
That's where I am. Like that is like the typical like 2.5 minutes to 4 minutes tops for the songs on my project because it is contemporary. But I definitely have like a huge appreciation for that music. Like everybody you just named and even more.
I
Like
kind of still
absolutely.
in that zone where I do things that not typical. I got stuff going 7 minutes, 12 minutes, 14 minutes, and that's not what is in the market. I'm in a different part of the market, but that's kind of where my head's at, and that's what I do. And from time to time, I'll do something that will maybe would work. It would be under 3 minutes, but it's my tendency is to go for the more stuff that's not current. But it's interesting. I think today that there's a you never know, because you could do something that's some big project, and then some sync licensing company takes like 30 seconds of it, and you still get it out there.
Absolutely, exactly. So there's a space for all of that. Not everybody needs to fit that
So
parameter
I mean, it's
at
just
all.
interesting
Like,
what
yeah.
you can do today. Because if you're open to the idea, I've heard people like are really indie and kind of like, oh, well, I'm not gonna sell out. I'm not gonna sync license. I'm not gonna let my stuff on a video game. I can't let it be on.
That wait.
Yeah,
That's
well, there's
considered
some
selling
people
out.
well, I've talked to some people kind of like indie kind of alternative bands that kind of got punk aesthetic, and they're like very anti doing that.
Oh, okay.
Because they just want to keep it what they
Of
think is
course.
real. I'm saying, well, being able to pay the bills is real.
Very real. But much respect to whatever an artist feels they have to do with their art because
It's
it's a
some
part of
guy.
them. So I totally understand. I just that was the first time I had heard that. I hadn't heard somebody say that licensing was selling out. So
Well, I
that's,
guess
yeah,
some
okay.
people are kind of like the starving artist mentality, that they don't think it's real unless they're not making any money.
Wow. Yeah. And I'm so not on that at all. Like I'm not, but sometimes you can get sucked into that. This is sort of on a tangent. But since you spoke about the starving artist mentality, I think a lot of people, they would love to be able to make a living wage or make ends meet with their talent and their art. But there is this pervasive mentality, and that mentality I think comes from a world, quite frankly, is I'll say a country, because I can't necessarily speak for how it is for other people who live in other countries. But so often we thrive on the art, we enjoy the art, we love the art, but then we don't necessarily support all, we're not consistent with our support. Just think about the child in the family who wants to become an artist. Oftentimes that's just not encouraged. It's not encouraged. It's like, well, how are you going to make money? That's the
Oh,
first thing a lot of
that's
parents
what
want to
parents
say. How are
told
you going to
me.
make money? They say that because they know the reality is that, oh, well, a lot of people are just not going to support that. Where's the infrastructure for the artist? So it exists, but you really have to seek it out. It's not the same infrastructure, say, if you want to become a teacher, accountant, attorney, doctor, and so on, for so many other for fields. So yeah, there's a lot more I can say about that, but I feel like the arts are very important. Can you imagine life without the arts? A lot of people try to downplay it, like, oh, you're just having fun. It's just a hobby, blah, 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 blah.
Well,
No, this is real. And
it's the
imagine your
life,
life without it.
the
You want this
lifeblood
in
of
your
America,
life.
really, if you think about like the art form of jazz and blues. I was watching like a documentary on Leadbelly, and Robert Johnson, the great blues artist, you know, a lot of Texas black blues men. And it was just, you know, there's so, they were so vital to actually the creation of rock and roll. You know, and everybody thinks about rock and roll being exactly. like, you know, an English man's game, you know, it's like the Who or Led Zeppelin. But, you know, it's our art form. We created it. And, you know, guys like Hendrix, you know, they're lionized, but, you know, there's so many great bluesmen that never got to that Hendrixian level. And I'm kind of a purveyor of that type of kind of funk, like a George Clinton, Bootsy Collins, Hendrix, you know, Curtis nice. Mayfield. And people are like, you know, black people folks have been doing rock, funk, you know, heavy grooves that created bands like Led Zeppelin, the Stones, you know, ahead of them or in the middle of it. Yeah. And it's just like, when people absolutely. Act like a black band can't rock, it's like, well, you don't know where rock came from.
I mean, a complete, and no shade to anybody, but a complete whitewashing, which has happened in a lot of different genres of music. You know, it's like, hello, you check the history, check who influenced a lot of these big names that you know of now. It, you know, we're yeah, right there. Like we're all, right there at the beginning. All the art
forms that are like right out there. I mean, we invented hip hop, which comes out of jazz, comes out of, you know, spoken word poetry, you know, the Harlem Renaissance poets. It's all, it, you know, from our kind of, you know, the pain of the American experience being turned into art. And that's the way I look at it. Like, if you think about it, like the pain, right. you know, in and all the great Harlem Renaissance poets, or, you know, the kind of blues story of going to the crossroads, and, you know, that type of story, that the kind of good versus right. light and dark that is in blues and jazz. You know, Billie Holiday, you know, when you listen to her sing, you hear the pain, you know, but it's beauty. And it's just like pain and then there's beauty. And that's kind of like what we are able to take out of the American experience and create all these art forms. And I think, you know, sometimes it gets lost like in the market, but at least in the genre you're in, it's totally understood that that's where it's coming from. But in other genres, it's a little more not as well understood.
Right. And a couple of things there that makes me think about the influence of my grandparents. My grandparents really turned me on to blues. You know, obviously that was when blues was like really at its height. It was before my time, but I had grandparents that really introduced me to it. So I definitely have a love for that, for blues yeah. itself. Just, I have a lot of fond memories and sentimentality connected to the genre and how it started and what it's become. It's something serious. I feel like blues is very underrated. But fortunately we do still have some blues festivals who are doing their best to keep it alive and some blues artists who are absolutely still doing their thing, which is great. But the other point I wanted to make is about just going back to the economics of it. Last I checked, at least at one point, unless things have changed, the entertainment industry is a big part of America's GDP. So let's not downplay the entertainment industry. So obviously yeah. I'm talking about movies, TV, film, music, all of the entertainment industry as a whole. That's what a lot of people are getting when it comes to American products. It's our entertainment. So it's
the commodity.
Yeah. So it's like the life, it's a part of the lifeblood and commodity out of America. Like we're not exactly. building, so yeah, let's give it its just like due.
In you know, Wuhan, but the big, you know, is the actual intellectual property of art, you know, and music and the film that we produce
exactly.
and all the creative material that we produce is like our number one export. It kind of represents America, you know. Like I said, when I was in Japan, like Japanese kids were vibing to, like, you know, Sly and the Family Stone. They were vibing to Coltrane. They were vibing to Sun Ra, and they were just totally like, wow. Like if I actually had like brought some Sun Ra records with me, and this Japanese guy was like freaking out because he was like, wow, that's the real, you know, it's the real thing. And
wow, they're
like,
yes.
There's an appreciation and an adoration for you know, our artists, mm-hmm. but some times were minimized. A lot of times, a lot of our artists had to go and become expats, you know, to actually get appreciated, you know, to be actually understood. Hendrix had to leave the U.S. to begin and then come back as a king, but when he left, and then, you know, with Beatles right. appreciated him, you know, McCartney and Lennon and Clapton, they all saw him and they said, wow, this guy's unbelievable. He wasn't appreciated when he was on the Chitlin circuit. He was playing for Little Richard. He was playing for the Isley Brothers. He wasn't making any money. And then, yeah, then he
James
got
Brown? Exactly. You know,
brought to mm-hmm. England, and then they brought him back in. And then suddenly he was a superstar. And that mm-hmm. kind of leaving and then coming yeah. back is kind of historic. There's a big pattern to that. which we got to try yes. to, you know, get yes. our people here to understand us before we have to leave. But so let me talk right. about like, two songs that I've seen. Well, your single Natural, is that mm-hmm. that was mm-hmm. released in 2020, but I wasn't sure like when in 2020 that was released. And I know you have your new album, but maybe you can talk about that song.
Yeah, so Natural was released in the latter part of 2020, and that's I'm actually releasing the video, so it's sort of almost like a re-release or resurgence of that song. I'm releasing the video for Natural January 28th in the afternoon, so basically 12:30 Central oh, cool. Standard Time, I'll be releasing or doing the video premiere for Natural. But yes, Natural is a song that was born out of my dating life, being single. I'm single. And I basically just woke up one morning thinking about like a crush and almost like daydreaming about what it would be like to be in this awesome relationship, healthy relationship where things are just going well and it's just kind of easy. And so I started playing these chords on my guitar, and it just flowed. It just flowed out. I'm playing the guitar, the chords sound good. And I just started singing the melody. I started humming the melody. And after I was humming the melody, then the words started coming to me. So that's how I built the hook of the song. And then from there, it kind of wrote itself. You know, I built on that. And then I brought in another songwriter to work on the second verse with me. So it's me and one other songwriter, and I have a vocal arranger as well to bring the song to where you hear it, how you hear it presented now. But yeah, it was born out of my real life experience.
Do you find that like when you write songs, do you kind of take a part of your life experience, or some artists like to kind of create a story and they say it's about somebody else? You know, they'll create a short story is a song, and then it's like characters. But a lot of times those characters really relate to something that happened to them, but they try to remove themselves a little bit to make it a little more comfortable. But do you find that you like to be more direct, or do you do the other?
I love to just build from my own personal experience and embellish. That's usually what I do. It's something that I know about, or I've experienced, or I know somebody pretty close to me that has pretty much experienced it. But when the more personal, I'm one of those artists that come from a very, very personal place, but it's never 100% my life. It's always embellished. It always has other elements that I add to it. So yeah, that song, it's done really well for me. People say that it makes them feel a certain way. A lot of people say it makes them feel kind of sexy, or it puts them in the mood or the mode of like of that mm-hmm. partnership that I'm talking about. But it's alluring, because it's not like the typical love song, if you will, whatever the typical love song is, but it just has a very almost like a whimsical, lighthearted naivete, very naive when it comes to the idea of I guess falling in love. And that's something that I like about it. It's very, very lighthearted.
Where people are so direct, I like the use of like Natural and the kind of vibe it brings up. It kind of, you know, I'm a child of the 70s, so I kind of feel like a 70s vibe in a way, you know, from that. Because people used to talk about, you know, natural born folks, you know, that, you know, the idea that, that you're kind of going back to nature and that you're going to be, you know, an organic experience or something. But there's this thing where it's like, it's real. It's coming from the heart. And it's kind of like, you know, that whole feel.
Right.
And today, sometimes people with hip hop and rap, they've gotten kind of like totally aggressive and totally in your face and maybe like a little too risque, a little really out there. And not that that's bad, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff out there. But sometimes it's cool to have like the talent of a songwriter is sometimes to have the like the nuance, you know. And I think the nuance is it looks like a poet, you know, why do you choose certain words? Because you're trying to make it mean something. And if you're too direct and too, you know, then it gets to a point where it's okay, is that art or are you just trying to shock value? You know, but just, you never know. But
I get your point.
yeah. And I listen to all types of genres, so I don't want a mumble rapper getting mad at me, but you know. you know, it's kind of what it is. But then, like, I was listening to Begin to End with the Victor, and I like that track a lot. So, how did you get? What's your? Yeah, I know you were singing on it. Were you involved in the actual creation of the, you know, the structure of the song, or you were just brought in to do the vocals? Or what's the collab on that?
So the song was produced by the Victor, and the Victor and I are very close. We go back a long time. Like, I've known the Victor my entire life. So we have a certain understanding when it comes to music. So whenever we get in the room together and we start working on something or we do file sharing, there's always an element of just understanding there. So this was something else. He started writing it about a situation in my life. And I'll just be open about it. Like, I was married once. So I went through a divorce and he was fully aware of it because, you know, of course, I talked to him about it. And I think this song, he was sort of inspired to write this song based on the experience that I told him that I was having. And so that's why it's Begin to End. So it's dealing with the end of a relationship, which you can hear. You hear me going through that, us going through it lyrically. So he sent me the idea, the track for it. Was pretty much, you know, built out at that point. It had a really strong and solid framework and foundation. And then I wrote my verse to it, but he had already written the chorus and, like I said, produced the instrumentation. And so I wrote my verse and we came together on the vocal arrangement of it. And actually we recorded it in Houston, Texas, which is where I'm from. And that, you know, the rest is history. And now you have the current version of it. We went from pre-production from file sharing to getting in the same room, hashing it out, recording it together in Houston. And he's actually in New York. So by the time we got to the point of releasing it, you know, he was there. I'm here where I am. And, you know, we got it mixed and now it's on his full project. And I'm actually I'm featured on another song on that project too. So there's the title track, Begin to End, and I'm also featured on his song On a Sunday. And On a Sunday actually talks a lot about what I was saying about my earlier life as far as coming up in church. There are a lot of personal references to what it was like on Sundays. So
yeah, obviously I was church listening is involved to that project that, so, and yeah. I was going to mention that other track that I saw that you were on that too. And it's cool that they actually hear how songs are constructed. That's why I like to get in depth on these podcast interviews, because you get to hear, like, sometimes, like, when you're doing a collab, it's the kind of, you know, maybe the other songwriter heard a story, you know, like he said, he knew your story and then he incorporated it into the music. And I've been in like rock bands where, you know, somebody like had like a line and they just say some line. And then boom, that triggers something in me. And then I'll run and do a chord progression on my Moog, you know, and then suddenly the drummer hears that and then they do this. Mm-hmm. And so it's like everybody's, you know, actually contributing to the song, you know, and sometimes it's interesting in music where you get some bands where they act like only two people really did it when like five people did it. You know, and yeah, the credit issues
oh,
in
the
the industry
credit,
is
the
just
credit
like you
issues.
get
Yes, I understand.
famous, like the Eagles, you know, is the big famous thing, where Don Felder actually came up with the hook
Yeah.
for Hotel California, he's a guitar player. So Don Felder is an Eagle,
Oh,
and he's a guitar player in the
okay.
Eagle, and they have Joe Walsh, he's another guitar player, and then you have Don Henley, drummer, and Glenn Frey. But Glenn Frey and Don Henley both said, you know, oh, well, we're the primary songwriters. You just came up with a riff. But that riff is like the whole structure of the song. And so to not give him writing credit, well, we're just going to pay you work
yeah.
for hire for that. And so that actually led to the breakup of the Eagles because of the bad blood, because of that situation. Because when that song ended up becoming such a big hit, and then he only got like a one-time payment. And then you kind of that's,
oh man,
that's gonna make
that's God, that's enough to leave anybody salty.
So they created kind of this bad blood in the band that ended up causing the fights, and then they end up not being able to work together anymore. And it's kind of like, you know, to me, when you're a writer and you work with other people, you kind of should give people credit. Like a band like REM, they kind of they came up with this idea. Okay, everybody's getting 25%. Because we're a band and we don't know where it's going to come from. So everybody just gets 25. We're a four-piece band. Everybody gets a piece. And they survived until they decided to just stop. But you know, sometimes a lot of fights have been because people don't think to be kind of fair.
Oh, I'm very, very much so familiar with that concept, that the lack of fairness, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Not interested in doing it again. But yeah, you're absolutely right about that. That credit piece is so, so very important. I actually used to cover Hotel California. So now I'm thinking about that. I'm like, I might want to bring that back to my set. It's a great
yeah,
song.
It's just
but
I
never knew the history.
You never understand
with,
like,
the Eagles
how
as
some
to
people
why
are
they
musicians
parted.
Could do that to another musician. But a lot of musicians have actually done some really
yeah.
not really cool things to other musicians. Look, like, okay, like you know, but you know that's interesting the way the industry is. But so you actually, I was talking a little bit about your background. You actually have a psychology degree, right?
I do. I have a psychology degree. This is very true. From the esteemed Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta, Georgia. Woo, woo, CAU.
Yeah. So
shout out to my
other
HBCUs
being
out
in this
there.
Industry?
Does it help? I'll tell you how it does help. The motto of my alma mater is I'll find a way or make one. That's literally my college's motto. I will find a way or make one. I went to school with DJ Cannon. If you're familiar with DJ Cannon and DJ Drama, they're big parts of the hip hop and rap music, and they helped to really advance the whole mixtape culture and what current rap culture is today. But anyway, my point is that it absolutely helps me because it helps to show me not only different parts of my culture that I was not aware of prior to attending that university, but it just really pushed me. And it's a private school. So, you know, I didn't go to classes with like hundreds of people. It was very, very hands-on, you know, smaller classroom sizes. I became really close to a lot of my instructors and professors. And they really like, you know, nurtured me, and some of them nurtured my talents. I was a part of the Philharmonic Society. Under the direction of the esteemed Dr. Glenn Halsey, who has also passed on, but he really, really pushed us and our voices to become one and to like really listen to each other. So there's so many experiences that I had at Clark Atlanta University. I still have relationships with people that I was one of my best friends. We went to school together and there, and it just yes,
yeah,
it
I
has
think
influenced
it helps
me.
Maybe understand. Great. Where people are kind of coming from and be able to come up with strategies to maybe negate
Definitely.
Negative energy or positive energy or handle situations. Cause I'm a sociology major. I actually went to a small school in Maine called Bowdoin College and had that kind of experience of having a small class
nice.
Size. And, you know, very, compared to my brother, he actually went to Brown, which was way bigger. And I just couldn't handle the big school. I was going to go to a school like that, but I liked the small school because I did like being in a class like 15 people, you know, 20 people, be able to go over to my professor's house because the professor's like lived on campus and you could go walk over and then discuss something, drink coffee with the professor, like on their couch and talk to it. And not a TA, they talk to the professor. But that.
Exactly. That's interesting. Another fun fact, you mentioned sociology. One thing about going to one of the AUC schools, it's called the Atlanta University Center. You have Spelman, Morehouse, Clark Atlanta University right there together, all clustered basically on one big campus. And you also have Morris Brown, who is about to come back. I believe they just got their accreditation back. However, I could actually take courses at Spelman and Morehouse, and which I did. And one of the classes that I took at Morehouse was a sociology class.
Yeah, I like sociology.
Since you have a sociology degree.
All this macro, micro, you know, anomie, all these ideas about how people work at a micro level, individual level, and then group societal levels. So it's kind of like a group psychology type of thing. The patterns of society. And I think as a songwriter, it actually helped.
Exactly.
I wasn't actually kind of use it for that. I use it in the corporate world to do different things I do, because that's kind of my day job is like in the corporate world. But it's interesting, like what you can take from your experiences and then put them into art. So I try to take everything I ever, you know, all my inputs and kind of pull them in. An idea like the Victorian poets used to talk about the muse. And you kind of pull your art from the muse. You kind of like Blake and like Tennyson, all those guys. They felt like they were pulling their creative energy from this like universal concept. And you could just, I think a lot of artists pull into that. You know, a lot of anybody that's a creative person, they pull from their experience, but they kind of are able to tap into that. Is that? Do you feel like sometimes you get as an artist, as like musicians, especially, do you feel like you're pulling on something that's kind of coming outside of you and from inside you?
Absolutely, there's both. Both are happening. So one of the things that I love about being an artist and being able to sing and write is the self-expression aspect of it. Like, I love that because so often, and I'm getting a lot better at it now as I learn and experience and go through life. But I've been so much better at writing my feelings and singing my feelings versus actually talking them out. So it's very therapeutic and cathartic. And I'm sure you've heard so many other artists say the same thing about how therapeutic it is. And it's a part of that is because, okay, now I can get this thing out that's within me. And then there's also the other people and other experiences that inspire me. Like, oh, okay, I had this experience in life, or I saw this thing that happened. Now I want to write about this now I want to sing about it because it affected me in some way. Perhaps I resonated with it. Maybe it really bothered me. Maybe it made me feel so great. So now I want to express myself, or I want to bring more attention to that issue. Oh, this is what's okay. For instance, Trap Lady is one of the songs that's on my project, and it's actually my rendition, my mixtape version, it's my version of a Bag Lady. So it's me paying homage. Thank you. It's me paying homage to one of my biggest influences, which is Erykah Badu. So you know, she did Bag Lady. I'm doing Trap Lady, but in Trap Lady, It approaches the song from a completely different perspective. It's like, it kind of keeps certain things intact, like melody wise, but I'm talking about something different. And I'm talking about what we see going on in the world right now. So that's me taking the outer experience and bringing it into my music. Some of those things I'm experiencing personally, but a lot of it is just me making observations and then just talking about it on the track.
Bob Dylan, as a songwriter, is that he could take outside, like macrocosm events, you know, and then kind of create these stories and create these characters that are actually involved in these events. Like this guy going to Maggie's farm, and he ain't gonna work on the farm no more because he's being abused on the farm by like a bad structure. but it's making a statement about like when capitalism is like it's not good and he actually abuses people, or like what happens with like all the actual protest songs he wrote during the civil rights era, that and then he's able to kind of put himself into the character of another person and tell that story or talk about some outside event and then relate it. I think that's what one of the great things about being a songwriter or a storyteller, or film director, actor, is we take all these inputs and we were able to get it out, and it's cathartic. Like you said, like a lot of what I do in my studio, I'll do hours and hours of stuff, and like part of it's not going to come out. Part of it's just cathartic. I'm just going to work on designing stuff on my Moog. I mean, I design sounds before I actually play anything, because I can build sound waves from scratch. And I'll spend hours and hours doing that, and it's kind of cathartic just to do it. And, it ends up taking like a couple hours worth of stuff to make something that's 5 minutes long. But, but you do it because the actual act of doing it makes you feel good, because you take all the pressure in your life and you can do something that's like positive because you're actually creating something. I think that's the great thing about being an artist is you can, and then some people don't have that, and maybe they have the fact that you made the music and then that makes them feel good. But I think being a creative person, that's always been something I appreciate. And I always like to talk to other creators to find out what their process is.
And I'm so glad that you reached out to me to have this conversation, because that's exactly what we're doing right now. And I appreciate just being able to not only have the conversation with you, it's great banter, but also to be able to share my story and share it with your audience as well. I'm always grateful for the opportunity
to have you on the show.
Thank you.
We will be pushing the links that you gave us. We are able to actually make active hyperlinks on our podcast. As I said, we are distributed on 11 podcast platforms. We are actually part of the Spotify family. We're actually a subsidiary of Spotify, but we'll be on Apple Music, Google Play. Nice. Like I said, there's 11 platforms. We will send you the Apple Music podcast version link. We will send you the Spotify and the Anchor FM within an hour. It takes a little
bit.
It happens faster to render. And then we will push it on our channels on Instagram. And one cool thing is that on Instagram, we have the ability to link by highlight to the Spotify podcast version of the podcast. So once we put that up as a story or a highlight, people can just click on that. It will go right to the Spotify version of the podcast.
Okay, perfect. Is there also a capability of there being
hyperlink?
Because I know you said we can go back and make additions or modifications.
It renders within like an hour after we do it. So once your video becomes available, we could link to like wherever the video is being played, if it's on YouTube or whatever channel it's on. If you have that link, we can add it. So we're able to do that. And we can have multiple links on a particular episode. And they are clickable within Spotify and Apple Music, which is pretty cool. I think they are within Anchor FM as well. So thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. I definitely appreciate the opportunity. And yes, I would love to, once I have some things to update, like the video and we'll make sure that the links are right. And I look forward to also promoting the podcast. So once I get the links from you, I'll figure out, how I want to share it on social media. And because content is always needed and necessary.
Thank you. That you work with that would benefit from being on the podcast. Let them know that we're always looking for guests. And, it's just part of what we do. As an artist, we feel the podcast format is actually giving us another venue to, connect. And so if you find other people that you think that this would help them in their work, let us know.
Absolutely. I would love to make some recommendations as far as artists that would also benefit from speaking with you on your podcast. I would like
Cool.
to.
Great.
I'd like
So
to
thank
immediately
you.
came to
Have
mind.
a great night, and we'll get these links to you within the next hour.